Welcome into another edition of Live from West End. Last week, we had the special guest of Paul Feinbaum, and now we're following it up with Deputy Sports Editor Anish Maga. Anish celebrated his 22nd birthday on Monday night. And boy, Anish has been so fun to work with. And he was at Mark Byington's introductory presser. It was last Thursday. So Anish, talk about your birthday first, and then talk about what you've seen from Mark Byington in his opening presser.
Birthday was incredible. Thank you guys for the wishes. Great birthday present, being on Live from West End as a special guest.
Yeah.
Mark Byington was great. It was a really cool experience. I went with one of our staff writers, Adam. I thought he had a lot of energy, and he came in saying all the right stuff, which is obviously a good start. We'll see how that translates moving forward. He seems very committed to engaging with the community. That's what he mentioned a couple of times, engaging with the students, getting them back in the stands and Memorial. Overall, it was a very positive experience. I thought one thing that stood out to me from the jump was that, you know, we had, when you walk in there, he first had public remarks to the entire media and fans, so anybody could walk in. And then after that, we went back for the press conference with just, you know, media members and him. But I thought the fact that he wanted to, you know, kind of stand in front of everybody and introduce himself, his goals, what he brings to the table, just a really good, really good start for not only how we think he's going to be as a coach, but also as a leader in the community.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I went just as a fan. Anish and Adam were obviously covering it for The Hustler, but I just went to see, you know, what he was going to say. I was interested in his opening remarks for Vanderbilt basketball, and it was just a super cool event. I mean, it was in Memorial Gym. It was a cool spot to have it. And, you know, what I found most interesting about what he said was, you know, I'm going to be able to shake hands with all these Vanderbilt fans in the future, but right now my priority is I want to build this roster. I want to retain the guys we have on the team now, and I want to get guys in the transfer portal to make this team an NCAA tournament contender from the get-go. Next season, he wants to be in the NCAA tournament. And that's, you know, I think any coach is going to say that when they come in. But I just love that confidence from Mark Byington and what he, you know, potentially brings to Vanderbilt.
Yep, absolutely agree. I think one thing that, you know, just jumping off that point, he said it in very nice ways, but there were at least a few times where he mentioned that this roster needs talent upgrades. And I think, you know, if you just look at the results from last season, you know, we had doubts about the coaching, as many of the fans did, but the roster was never good enough to really compete for anything. So I think the fact that he recognizes how important, you know, utilizing NIL, and hopefully Candace gives him a big budget, we can get into that in a little bit, but I think that he definitely comes in with the expectation that we are going to be able to see a lot of talent upgrades from the jump.
You know, college basketball, both men's and women's, and football right now, with the entire market and the climate, is just the Wild West. And before we dive into NIL, let's look at this roster. Colin Smith, Jason Rivera-Torres, Tyron Lawrence are the three names where you've seen players enter the transfer portal. And these were key pieces to the Vanderbilt team last season. If you do lose those guys and you bring the James Madison player in, Jalen Carey, who averaged 7 points and 4.3 rebounds, he can be a forward slash center for the team next year. And you have a Van Allen Lubin, and hopefully you get some good recruits and other good players in the transfer portal. It's still not enough. You need to get great four-star recruits, great players from the college portal. What do you think the push is for maybe a Vanderbilt donor or a Vanderbilt alumni saying, I want to give to a Vanderbilt team where it can build the most? Was it the experience last year where Vanderbilt had a nice push where this is where you should be allocating money? Or do you say, no, I should be allocating money somewhere else, like the Dare to Grow campaign, and I should be helping build a med center? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
What would you be if you're an alumni? And has Byington been a sell? Is he selling the program?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, these big donors that Vanderbilt potentially has, that, you know, they need to see the potential growth in Vanderbilt men's basketball. Mark Byington obviously had a great career at JMU, beat Wisconsin in the round of 64 this year in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, there should just be excitement around him coming to Vanderbilt. I think it was a great get from Candace Story Lee, you know, in the coaching search. And I think, you know, donors should want to donate to Vanderbilt basketball. There's an exciting future for it. I think Mark Byington is going to completely revamp this roster, hopefully do well on the recruiting trail, and get good guys from the transfer portal. So I think, you know, Jerry Stackhouse had to go, right? If he didn't go, donors were going to pull their funding. So I think this was a smart move from Candace Lee to, you know, find new potential for Vanderbilt basketball.
Yeah, I think, you know, going to Wolf's point of, you know, how can the Anchor Impact Fund really get people to commit to this? There's definitely a vision, and, you know, that honestly doesn't mean much when it's just words, but I think judging from his press conference, he definitely understands the need for talent upgrades, as I was mentioning. He definitely understands the need to kind of reconnect with the community, and he definitely understands the need for this program to just get better. One thing, you know, he mentioned a few times during the press conference was how he's already talking to recruits. He's already seen a lot of interest. And, you know, of course he's going to say these things in his introductory presser, but there's a lot of communication about how he sees the need for the program to get better and how he's already doing things to kind of get there. So I think that's a very positive reflection of, you know, how he wants to coach and, as a result, why donors should be a little bit or be very intrigued about his potential as leading this program.
I think what the Vanderbilt community also needs to know is in Mark Byington's first year as head coach, it's going to be nearly impossible to have this team go to the NCAA tournament, because I think a lot of recruits need to see something that's been built here. And there really hasn't been much to show of other than what happened 2 years ago. And I think a big reason for this hire, obviously, Dusty May goes to Michigan thanks to a great Final Four run last year. I think a big reason for this hire was you saw a clear disconnect with Coach Stackhouse, who got let go, or mutually parted ways, I should say. You saw a clear disconnect with him and the Vanderbilt community. I think if you see Mark Byington, like I think Anish tweeted it with Vanderbilt Hustler Sports, Coach Stackhouse was never at a Vanderbilt fraternity greeting fans or students like that. Like a coach really immersed in the community and with students, maybe students' parents will start seeing that as like a sign of, wow, this guy really breeds Vanderbilt basketball and wants to help out the program. I really wants to help out, you know, build a champion on West End. And I think having Shea Ralph is a really good person for him to look for and look as a mentor of how do you build a culture that's really been rotting, hasn't made an NCAA tournament in quite some time, and someone that can build a champion on West End. I think he should really be using Shea Ralph and the people around him at Vanderbilt to help build something.
I completely agree, Wilf. You know, Shea Ralph is the perfect example of how to turn around a program. She did an exceptional job this year, obviously beating Columbia in the first four game of the NCAA tournament. And I think just getting to the NCAA tournament was an accomplishment itself. You know, they're predicted to be last in the SEC on SEC Media Day last, you know, just before the season started. And so Shea Ralph is the perfect example of what Mark Byington will hopefully do. And I think, you know, you look at some of the transfers, or I guess one transfer that Mark Byington has brought in, it's the Jalen Carey guy from JMU. And I was a little bit confused because on Vandy, or not Vandy, 247 Sports, he's listed as a center at 6'6", which is a little strange. But, you know, I think he had a great, you know, freshman season at JMU. He could potentially bring some size to Vanderbilt's roster. And I think some of these key departures for Vanderbilt that you see that are leaving to go to the transfer portal aren't maybe as big of losses as people think. I wouldn't entirely panic, you know, that Colin Smith's going. Carter Lang, I think, is entering the transfer portal today. And I think Vanderbilt's team this year was just so appallingly bad. I'm almost, you know, I think it's good for Vanderbilt to maybe get rid of some of these players and bring in new guys.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, as you mentioned, I think Carter Lang entering today brings it to six transfers out. That's the first one to go under Byington's, you know, hire. I would say I think it'll be really interesting to see, you know, just kind of as kind of a measure of how good he is as a recruiter, what happens with, again, Jason Rivera-Torres, Colin Smith, Paul Lewis, and then the others. I think Tyron Lawrence is kind of gone for all intents and purposes. You know, it's the second time in the portal. I don't think he's going to want to come back. But for the rest of them who are, you know, at least those three that I mentioned, JRT, Smith, and Lewis, all three of them were at his introductory presser, you know, were spotted. He mentioned after that, you know, they still have interest, they still love going to Vanderbilt, and they could possibly return. And I think it's a very good measuring stick early on. If he can get these people, if you get these players back to a place that they, you know, have familiarity versus, you know, kind of taking the unknown. But I am very interested to see, A, how that goes, and then B, thinking about a little bit more about the JMU transfers, he did get Carey, which was their best freshman, and certainly looks very promising. It kind of looks like he's a player who emulates Van Allen Lubin's build, which is not a bad thing at all. I think we'd gladly take more Van Allen Lubin's on West End. Terrence Edwards Jr., I think, was the big get. Unfortunately, he went to join Chris Mack in Louisville, so we won't get him, the Sun Belt Player of the Year. But I am interested to see if there are any more JMU players, and then, again, Vandy players who already entered the portal that he can bring to West End.
And you see a lot of players like Dalton Connect, who's the best transfer in college basketball. He played for Northern Colorado last season. Obviously, he played really well, but that's not a Power 5 school. Can Vanderbilt find a diamond-in-the-rough type player? I think that's a really, really, really important thing. But what I think a lot of people need to know is at Vanderbilt, to graduate on campus, you need at least 60 credit hours, which is equivalent to 4 semesters on campus. A school like Miami is 45, 30, Syracuse is 30 hours. Again, there's only 11 private schools in the Power 5. So if you do all this math, Stanford's in the same boat as Vanderbilt. I think Northwestern is as well. But when you have those requirements, 60 credit hours on campus, it's almost impossible to get an upperclassman. That's why you've seen a lot of those transfers. Like Van Allen Lubin's a sophomore. Evan Taylor was a graduate. This is where I want to kind of talk to you guys about the structure of the tough academic rigors at Vanderbilt. Do you think that's holding Vanderbilt back from getting the best possible transfers, those hard, you know, requirements for saying, oh, you need 60 credit hours on campus? Like, a senior is not going to come to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think it definitely stands in the way of Vanderbilt getting these top-tier transfers who are seniors because of the 60 hours. You have to be here for 2 years to actually graduate. And, you know, it just puts a burden on whoever's the coach at Vanderbilt. You have to find transfers who are, you know, sophomores or freshmen or graduate transfers who are here to get a graduate's degree. But, I mean, you also look at the NIL landscape. Vanderbilt is not too, you know, does not have a favorable NIL fund right now, so it's difficult to get transfers. So I think it's the culmination of those two big things that are holding Vanderbilt back in the transfer portal.
Yep, and I do think, with all that being said, absolutely, the credit hours thing is huge. But I do think that at the same time, there's a lot of things that you can sell potential recruits on. I mean, you have the allure of the SEC, the allure of Nashville, the allure of going to a great academic school, and I think what's a growing NIL fund, I mean, if we're taking what athletics are telling us, you know, just through their public statements at their face value, it does seem that they are, you know, growing their NIL collective. So, you know, while the credit hours thing is a big setback, I do think there are a lot of things for potential recruits to kind of enjoy about Vandy. And, you know, that's the reason why I think we've gotten a lot of these, not a lot, but some very high quality recruits in the past, thinking about, you know, Garland, Simi Chitu, Neesmith down the line. I do think that there are still a lot of things to sell about Vandy, but, you know, again, with a school that's private in a Power 5, you're going to always have some difficulties.
You know, one last question specifically for Anish here. You watched Ezra Manion play for a while, Tyron Lawrence play for a while, and with a new coach and losing great players in your backcourt, you know, you lose a sense of identity. What do you think the Commodores will lose with Ezra and Tyron both gone next season?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be huge. I think Ezra was very obviously the biggest leader on the team and someone who kept them together, not only last season when things were rough, but the season before after that, I think it was 101-44 loss to Alabama. That really changed their season. I think he was at the heart of, you know, that turnaround. So you lose, you know, you lose a lot there. But at the same time, I don't have to talk about how good Tyron was the entire time he was here. But with that being said, I think there is a chance here for Byington to kind of remake Vanderbilt basketball. You know, in his press conference, he mentioned he wants his team to be entertaining, fast pace, flying around the court. You know, at JMU, he led one of the best offenses in the country. They shot a lot of threes and moved the ball a lot. And, you know, while Ezra and Tyron are both amazing players in their own right, I think that there is a chance for Byington to come in and kind of just change the structure and of how this roster and team is built. So I do think they're going to miss them a lot, but I'm very excited for what Byington can bring. That's different.
Completely agree. Henry, any last thoughts for the men's basketball team before we, you know, transition to baseball?
I mean, Mark Byington, I thought, you know, he was impressive in his opening press conference, but we won't really see the results until November when he starts playing games and coaching Vanderbilt's basketball team. I'm really hopeful for next year. Hopefully he can bring a new element to Vanderbilt men's basketball, which has been a little dead this year. There's not many students in the stands. You know, the crowds have diminished you know, substantially in this last year. So hopefully Mark Bynes can reignite some Memorial magic.
Let's transition to a more successful team on Vanderbilt's campus, the 23-7 Vanderbilt Commodores. Before we talk about LSU loss last night, Commodores have won 14 straight games on Hawkins Field. And, you know, those win streaks on Hawkins Field, I think Commodore fans are kind of getting used to. Tim Corbin has built the championship on West End. There are a lot of injuries in the bullpen, though, like a Dekanich, which is, you know, quite scary and could harm the team come Omaha time if there is. But now let's talk about the game last night. LSU gets off to a 7-0 lead by the fourth inning, and then Vanderbilt was always playing catch-up. They ended up losing. But, you know, the LSU Tigers are an 18th-ranked team, and everyone was saying this would be a great test because the Commodores, against a Missouri type of team, they can sweep them, but those aren't the types of teams that will go to Omaha. You know, what are your guys' impressions on this Vanderbilt baseball team in early April? Is this what you guys expected, or are you a little underwhelmed? For me, I would say I always expect a slow start at the beginning, but they need to start picking it up, especially with their bullpen, because once May and June come around, if they allow, you know, 10 plus runs to great teams, they're not going to be going very far.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's been, you know, they had a great non-conference schedule, and they had the sweep against Auburn to start SEC play. It was great. You know, people, you know, I think Vanderbilt got up to like a number 3 national ranking. It was great. Everyone thought, you know, the bullpen's deep, the hitting's on point. And then you go to South Carolina, and it was a bit of a tough series at South Carolina. You got swept by the Gamecocks. Only were able to secure 9 runs over the 3 games. The offense looked stagnant. The bullpen struggled as well. You know, some of those guys who aren't starters, you know, Carter Holton and Devin Vitrell have been pitching great all season. But when you get to the 7th and 8th and 9th inning and you have to put someone in from the bullpen, it hasn't been as successful. And, I mean, the sweep over Missouri was good. Missouri's a very weak team. They're definitely ranked last in the SEC. So I'm not, you know, I don't think that's too telling of what this team's capable of. And, you know, this LSU series is probably their biggest test of the year. I think LSU's better than the number 18 team in the country. But then again, you know, they were on a 4-game losing streak before last night. They wanted to come out hot. They wanted to secure a win against a top 10 team, and they did just that. But I think, you know, Vanderbilt could bounce back in these next 2 games and even secure the series behind, you know, Bryce Cunningham and Carter Holton tomorrow and today.
Yeah, honestly, I think I'm a lot less bullish, a lot less optimistic than you guys. I mean, Vanderbilt has 2 series wins thus far, you know, to amount to 6 conference wins with 2 sweeps, obviously. And those are over teams that are both 1-8 in the conference in Missouri and Auburn, and those are both at home. They struggled a ton against South Carolina. They looked pretty bad last night before they turned it around after they were already down 9-0. I'm not going to lie. I think it's been kind of underwhelming in conference play. I think the pitching is typically as good as was expected, which is great, but the hitting hasn't really kept up with how they're doing in non-conference, which is to be expected, but I don't think they're playing at the level that they need, and they have some injuries, namely Jack Bulger, and then as Andrew mentioned, in the bullpen as well. But I think there needs to be a pretty big reckoning, a big turnaround coming, because 6-4 in the SEC looks pretty good on its face. But when you dig a little bit deeper, I think the wins have all come against very poor teams, and they're struggling on the road, and they're struggling against good teams. So I don't know where that would put them come the end of SEC play heading into the postseason.
I think I'm also a little bit more pessimistic. Maybe there's some scar tissue from watching Vanderbilt football and men's basketball for 4 years, and I have that mentality with baseball, and maybe I shouldn't. But a guy like David Diaz, right, third baseman for the Commodores, batting .274 in the majors. That's not bad, but in college baseball, that's not great. They've played some pretty poor opponents. It was nice to see he had 2 runs against LSU and 1 hit on 4 at bats, but. You know, again, if those type of leader type of players are below 300, it's going to be hard to be playing championship type of teams. I think it's still too early to see what the makeup of this top 10 Vanderbilt team will be. They need to get healthy fast. And I think Tim Corbin is the type of coach that come late May, late April, early May, can help these guys lock in and get ready for postseason.
And I think the biggest thing that you've seen in the last kind of couple series is the defense. The defense has been a lot. It was very bad against LSU last night. They had struggles against South Carolina 2 weekends ago. And Vanderbilt's defense is something they pride themselves on, right? Tim Corbin has a ton of great players in the field. You know, Davis Diaz is a great third baseman, hasn't shown in the last 2 series. you know, Jonathan Vastein had, I think, an error last night, and so did Jaden Davis at second base. And these are you know, fundamental things that Vanderbilt needs to fix. I think if they want to make a deep postseason push, they have to stop, you know, shooting themselves in the foot. They have to play solid defense, no drop balls from the outfield, consistent outs in the infield when they're playable.
Yeah, and I mean, I totally agree with that point, and I would also add on that this isn't something that's just popped up in the last couple of weeks. This has actually kind of been a theme for the whole season, has been pretty bad defense. You know, I'm thinking back to when they blew that 4-run lead against Dayton in the 8th inning. You know, a ball deep into left field goes right over Jack Bolger's glove, and 2-run score. Things like that can't really be happening. I mean, they got away with it in non-conference versus obviously poor teams at home, but now that we're in the SEC, it's going to be pretty difficult to get away with it. And this series is very critical for them, because the next one coming up is against Texas A&M in College Station. And if you guys have been keeping up with the SEC, Texas A&M looks very, very, very good, and probably the second best team in the country behind Arkansas, of course. So it's going to be pretty difficult to keep racking up the SEC wins, and especially when you consider that they got two of the easier series out of the way early. So I'm a bit pessimistic right now, and I think this team needs to turn around fast. But, of course, with Tim Corbin leading the team, I think that's a fair expectation.
A lot of exciting stuff for baseball. Hopefully the Commodores get back on the board, the winning board, on Friday and Saturday against the Tigers. Let's talk about the Final Four and start with women's basketball. This Final Four, Caitlin Clark, she and the Iowa Hawkeyes against LSU, they won. 12.3 million views, which is the most watched college basketball game in women's college basketball game in history, which is really good for the sport and specifically for growing the women's sports. And, you know, I don't think it's just media buzz. I really think this Caitlin Clark player is the best. It could be the best college women's basketball player that we've ever seen in our generation. And it's just fun to watch. They'll be playing UConn, and then South Carolina will be playing NC State. So let's just talk about what you all have been seeing from Iowa, and do you think they can go all the way against probably South Carolina next? It'll be Tuesday.
I think that's a bit of a – you're looking over a team a little bit here, Wolf. I think
UConn, in NC State or in UConn?
In UConn. I think UConn's been great all season. I think Paige Buchers has been injured the last couple of years, but she was kind of like Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark hit the scene. So I think they're going to have a tough test against them. So I think that'll be a very good game. I believe that's tonight. But I think to win it all, my pick would definitely be South Carolina. I mean, a 36-0, just an absolutely stacked roster. You got Dawn Staley leading the crew. I mean, we watched how good they were when they smacked Vanderbilt earlier in the year. Marched right to an SEC championship. I would be really surprised if anybody was to take them down this year. Last year, I believe it was Caitlin Clark who eliminated them, but I don't see that happening again. So, again, would be very surprised if South Carolina doesn't take it all this year.
Well, look, I mean, Caitlin Clark was so impressive in their Elite Eight game against LSU. I think she dropped like 40 points. It was insane. She made like 9 threes. So it was so impressive. I can't wait to watch her in the Final Four today. And, you know, I think South Carolina is a great team, and I think they're destined to go far. But boy, would I love to see NC State beat them. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. A lot of my extended family are all Wolfpack fans. I'm cheering for them come, you know, tonight, and I hope NC State Wolfpack can make a run. But South Carolina is going to be a tough opponent to beat, and we'll see how it plays out.
I mean, they've lost 3 games in the past 3 seasons, and they are maybe the best dynasty in college sports right now. They are the mid-2000s Alabama football peak era right now. They are killing it, and they have a lot of really fun players to watch. Who is can we get final predictions and score? For me, I'll start off. I have South Carolina losing to Iowa 70-63.
Wow. All right. I'm going to go the opposite of that. South Carolina over Iowa. I'll go 71-64.
I am going to be bold. I'm going to say South Carolina loses in the Final Four. So it's going to be an NC State-Iowa final. But eventually the Wolfpack conquer Iowa 62-55. It'll be low scoring-ish.
So I think you hit the nail right on the head, Henry. You talk about NC State. Let's talk about the men's team. NC State behind DJ Burns is just so fun to watch. A lot of people forget he started off his college career with the Tennessee Volunteers, and then he spent some time at Winthrop, and he was really everywhere. I think he's 23. He's a big body. Everyone loves him right now. He had a great game against Duke. And anyone who watches college basketball and is a junkie, and if you know someone at Duke, or if you don't know anyone at Duke and have no family there, you likely hate Duke. So and this UNC player, he was like a fun guy to watch. Everyone's kind of rooting for or NC State right now, I'd say. And you know, can we talk about what you guys see there? And do you think they have any chance of going further than they're in right now?
Well, I love DJ Burns. I'm on the DJ Burns train right now. I think everyone in America is. I love him. He's such got a lovable personality, and it's so impressive what NC State has done. They weren't even meant to make the tournament coming into the ACC tournament, and then they win the ACC tournament, and then they go on this incredible run in the NCAA tournament. So I'm hoping the Wolfpack go far. It's going to be a tough matchup for them against Purdue. I don't think, you know, DJ Burns is going to have a favorable matchup against Zach Edey. It's going to be a tough one. DJ Burns is significantly shorter than Zach Edey, and Zach Edey is, you know, more agile and can get around the rim a little easier. But maybe, you know, the Wolfpack, they've got some March magic going right now. Maybe they can extend it, get into the final. I would love to see an 11 seed get there.
Yeah, no, I think having an 11 seed there would be awesome. I really don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately. I think Edie's averaging 30 and 12 or 30 and 13 in this tournament so far. He's looked absolutely unstoppable. And if DJ Burns is going to guard him, I think he might go for 40. Yeah. I mean, DJ Burns is 6'9", Edie's 7'4". I think DJ Burns is going to have, you know, he'll have his moments. I think he's such a big body and can move so well for his size that it's inevitable. But I think he's going to have a very tough day against Edie. And they do have a lot of strong backcourt help as well, who's, you know, shown throughout this tournament that they can play. But I'd be very surprised if they're able to take down Purdue.
I'm with you, man. Although Zach Edey got, I think, a lot of generous calls, I would say, against Tennessee and Tennessee's big men were clearly, you know, disgruntled by a lot of these calls. Some got fouled out, I believe. Zach Edey is just such a force, and I think he's just a more natural basketball player than DJ Burns. I think he's more skilled, obviously more talented. He got College Basketball Player of the Year. So for predictions, I have Purdue beating NC State and then Alabama beating UConn, who's in the Final Four for the second consecutive year, and then Alabama beating Purdue 85-80.
I
really am a Mark Sears. I think, watching these players live, it makes you kind of root for them a little more. And I know Alabama's in the SEC, but you got to root for the conference, in my opinion.
Agree.
I love it. Yeah, I think, you know, UConn's really good. It's going to be tough to beat them. But I would love to see an SEC team. SEC struggled so hard this NCAA tournament. I would love to see one of them get to the final. I'm going to pick the Crimson Tide over UConn, and then I'm going to pick NC State over Purdue, the two underdogs in both matchups. But in the end, the Alabama Crimson Tide will conquer the Wolfpack, unfortunately, and secure, I think, their first ever national title.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be the boring one here. I mean, UConn's won 10 March Madness games in a row, all by double digits, so I don't think anybody has a chance against them. I think they take down Alabama by 20-plus, and I think Purdue, unfortunately, ends NC State's run, and I think UConn beats Purdue by double digits and wins again. Because I just think they're too good. I think they're too good. But, yeah, that's my pick.
Should we transition to anything but Vandy?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Anyone have a good one on tap?
I mean, I have a pretty boring one, actually, just off the base of that conversation. But I think it's a little bit of a hot take.
Okay, let's hear it.
I think Zach Edey is a top 10 pick in the next draft. And I know it's very unpopular because he's a big guy and everyone – doesn't like him or doesn't like watching him because he gets a lot of foul calls. But I think he's 7'4". He moves quite well. At the worst, you're looking at like a rotation big who can provide valuable minutes and scoring off the bench and play good defense at 7'4". At the best, I think you're looking at a solid starter who is a very, very good defensive player at the NBA level. So I don't know. It's mostly a product of his size, yes, but I do think he's very skilled. He's a great post-Arsenal. So I'd be surprised if he's not at least a solid player in the league, but I think he has enough upside, especially in a weak draft, to go top 10. So that's my anything but Vandy take.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I'm not too on the NBA, you know, draft boards, but you know, I think there's gonna, you know, Zach Edey could go high. I think he's a little bit not enough of a shooter. He can kind of just do stuff around the rim, really. I feel like I haven't really seen him shoot from the outside, but maybe he'll go top 10. We'll see.
The Ringer, they had their mock draft today. They have him going to the Heat and pairing him up with a guy like Bam Adebayo. That could be a cool front court. Does he jump up those seven spots? We'll see. If he has a great Final Four, it will only help his stock. So I don't hate that take, Anish.
Yeah, I can go next. I'm always one to bring up golf on the podcast because it's just, you know, I just love good golf. But it is Masters week next week. Everyone get excited. It's the best week of the year, a tradition unlike any other, truly. And, you know, it's a week you follow it all week. You follow the par three contests on Wednesday, the tournament Thursday through Sunday. It's always exciting. You get together with friends, get to watch the Masters. I think it's the best thing ever. But in terms of who I think is going to win the Masters, I think it's not going to be a defending champion. I don't think Jon Rahm and I don't think Scottie Scheffler are going to do it. Kind of hot takes there. But I would love to see, who would I love to see? I feel like, you know, Nick Dunlap is not going to win it, but he's going to have a great week. He's going to have a top 10 finish, I think. And I'm going to scratch that. I think Jordan Spieth is going to win it again for the second time since 2015. I'm going to go back on my original take and say that Jordan Spieth takes the dub. I love Jordan Spieth. He's great. So I'm going to say that. Forget everything I said before.
It doesn't need to be hot takes, but I like it. So that's not bad. I'll do kind of a hot take too. So I don't know if any of you guys have tried gluten-free pretzels.
Nope. No.
I think they're much better than normal pretzels.
Whoa.
I feel like you're wrong and I haven't even tried them.
Yeah, I don't need to try them to know that.
They're
wrong.
A little less salty, but I think they're crunchier and better. I really, you know, next time I'm at CVS, I might need to buy a pair of gluten-free pretzels to give.
I think
they're good.
Yeah, Andrew's at his brother's wedding currently, but when he comes back, I think all three of us will enjoy some gluten-free pretzels together and put it to the test.
Yeah, say congratulations to your brother, Will, for getting married. Dude,
I will.
That's sick.
Exciting time. Henry just turned 20. Anish just turned 22. I just turned 22. It's good times in life.
It is.
Well, all, thank you so much for listening, and I wish you all a good weekend of watching of the Final Four.